Okay, well, I mean, this all started years and years ago when I did a ski season when I was 18, and I used to look out the window and I used to see Mont Blanc, and I used to think, oh, it'd be really cool to climb that mountain one day, and I kind of put that thought to the back of my head. And then a few years later, I did my motorbike licence, and I thought, oh, it'd be really great to ride a motorbike down to the south of France. And then the following year, I learned to paraglide, and I was in honesty when I learned to paraglide, and I thought it would be fantastic to fly a paraglider off the top of Mont Blanc. And then about 12 months ago, I came up with this crazy idea. I thought, well, I could get a paraglider, I could ride a motorbike down to the south of France, I could climb the mountain with the paraglider on my back and then fly off the top and kind of take all the three things that I wanted to do and wrap them into one and kind of make it happen. And lots of people told me I was mad and everything.
Mm.
And I put it off and put it off, and then I thought, actually, I could really do this. And I've got some great people behind me. I've got BMW Pickups, they sponsored me, and they loaned me a bike. And then Ozone lent me their ultralight mountain wing, which was fantastic. And then I got Erwin Jayer involved, who's quite a well-known guy in the flying community. He taught me to fly. And the two of us, kind of, we dedicated a month to it. We decided to give it all of September, because obviously, as you know, it's a difficult mountain to summit, as any big mountain. But then to get the opportunity to fly off the top as well, you know, it's a pretty small window. And so we thought if we gave ourselves a month, we'd have good opportunity to give it a few goes if we needed to.
So that was September?
Yeah, so we set, I aimed to be there the first week of September, which I was, and straight away, like, I thought, oh, I'll have a bit of time to do a bit of altitude training and practice on the wing. And literally, the weather was looking good, and everyone was like, come on, let's get on the mountain. So I arrived on a Sunday evening, and then on Monday morning, we were over in Chamonix, and we were straight up for our first, for the first attempt. I mean, the first attempt. It wasn't really, I mean, had everything been perfect, we'd have probably gone for it. But really what we were doing was we were going up there to get some altitude, to do a first take off on snow for me, because I've never done that on a paraglider, and just to check the mountain out and get some experience, really.
Mm-hmm. And how high did you get that first time you walked up?
Okay, well, the first time we went from Chamonix side, and we took the cable car up to the Aigle du Midi, so up to 3,800 metres, and we hiked up to Mont Blanc de Tacle, which is 4.2. When we got up there, we had hoped to fly back down, but the wind was in the wrong direction, so we hiked back down to the Cosmic Refuge.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed there overnight, and we got up early in the morning, and we decided that because the weather wasn't great, we'd just try and get a flight. So we hiked across to the Aigle du Midi and took off there, and it was a pretty hairy takeoff because the wind was blowing quite strongly, and we were battling with the winds a bit, really.
So which side did you take off on the Midi?
Sorry?
Which side did you take off on the Midi?
The Chamonix side.
The Chamonix side, yeah.
Yeah, and managed to do a reverse launch. I was absolutely terrified.
It's very steep there, though, isn't it? I mean,
sorry?
I say the north launch is very steep.
It's incredibly steep, yeah. And we obviously kept our crampons on because we were on snow. And so as soon as I'd taken off, I was thinking that it's great to have taken off and everything. I was thinking, oh no, I've got to land in these crampons. And it was an okay landing, but I did kind of stab into the ground and fall straight over. So
no.
I didn't hurt myself, but I never actually did manage to perfect that. Each landing I did was a bit of a stab the crampons and then fall down. But there was no way I was going to take off without them on.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And then the next time you...
Yeah, then we went back to Annecy and started watching the weather again. And the second time we decided that we'd try the different route. We'd go up from the other side. So we went to Saint-Gervais and we took the tram up. And the tram doesn't go as high as the cable car. The tram goes up to 2,300.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that extra height to hike up, and that was okay because we'd obviously had the previous trip to kind of acclimatise and get fit for it.
Mm.
So we decided that we'd try bivouacking the next time as well, instead of staying in the refuge. And because it's so busy in the Goutte hut, we couldn't get a spot anyway, so we had the extra weight of our bivouac stuff, and we hiked up, and we decided that we'd hike just above the Goutte refuge this time. And it ended up being an extra 500 metres, so that night we'd climbed almost 2,000, that day we'd climbed almost 2,000 vertical metres, and we stayed out at 4,300 metres. And of course, the weather wasn't bad at all. It was very still, but it was quite cold. And it was great, though, because we could see all the stars and everything, and we both were kind of thinking, this is it, you know, if the weather stays like this, we're on for the summit and possibly a fly.
Mm.
And we got up at 3 o'clock out of our bivouacs, And within 45 minutes, I'd say, the weather starts coming in, and it was like the stars started disappearing, and I was thinking, oh no, here come the clouds. But kind of stayed optimistic. I thought, well, as quick as it comes in, it can go out again. And we sort of headed off, and we were at the front of everyone, because obviously people were leaving from the Goutte hut, but we were up ahead, and we were actually climbing this really steep ice face, and it had snowed ever so gently, so there was I couldn't see what was blue ice underneath me, and I lost my footing, and I actually fell, and I was roped to Erwin at the time, and as I fell, I pulled him off backwards.
No way.
And I managed to arrest myself, but in pulling him off backwards, he then fell past me at speed and pulled me off again, and we were both falling, and fortunately, we both managed to arrest ourselves, and we kind of just lay there in the snow, and I just looked at her, and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry about that, and we sort of gathered ourselves, and we carried on a little bit after that, but the weather was getting worse and worse, and we probably could have gone for the summit, but there was no point, because we wouldn't have been able to fly, so we decided to call it a day at 4,500 metres on that one.
Oh, wow.
And decided to head back down. So it was all quite hairy, that was. And we were fortunate, because we were able to fly from just above the Goutte. The weather had, in the time it had taken us to get from 4,500 back down to the Goutte, the weather had kind of cleared, and we'd got slightly below the cloud. And so I managed to get another takeoff, which was great. But I don't know, it didn't really hit me at the time, but afterwards I thought, blimey, this is a really dangerous thing that we're doing.
Mm.
And then back to Annecy again, and it was a week and a half then. It wasn't until the 22nd that the weather was looking good again to go off from the top. So the third time we went up, we knew that it would be our final attempt. And obviously, I mean, getting the weather right is just a nightmare, because you look at several forecasts, and the high altitude forecasts can be quite different to the lower ones. And obviously you need the right weather up high, but you also don't want it to be cloudy below, because if there's no wind but there's cloud below, you can't take off and fly down in that. So we were trying to pinpoint it, and it was literally changing by the hour. And in the end, we decided that we'd leave on the Sunday, and we wanted to climb on the San Gervais side on the Goutte route, and the tramway closed on the Sunday. So we got there on Sunday night, and we drove as high as we could, which was to Bellevue, which is 1,700 metres or thereabouts, and we bivouacked outside the car. So the next morning when we set off, we had the longest distance to go out of all the attempts we'd made.
So you walked up the whole mountain?
Yeah. We did the whole thing, and it was quite cool, actually, because Erwin has actually summited the mountain once before, and it was 38 years ago. And then we set off, he said to me, he said, I've got a good feeling about this. This is the route I took 38 years ago. So that was kind of quite nice.
Oh,
and it was
nice
that we'd sort of done it in all the ways that it's possible to do it, you know, with the cable car, with the tram, and then all the way on foot.
Sorry, carry on.
Well, we set off, and because the Goutte hut was now closed, but the winter room was open, we decided that we wouldn't take the bivouac kit any higher than, well, where we'd camped outside the car because of the extra weight, that we'd stay over in the winter room and just go for it. And we got up there, and it was quite a hike getting up there, but we were fairly fit from the previous trips. And the weather was looking good, so we snuggled up for the night in the winter room, and 3 o'clock in the morning got up, and you could see the stars again, and you don't want to get too excited, you know, you kind of want to focus on what we've got to do, but, you know, because you know that the weather can come in really quickly, I didn't want to get my hopes up, but I think we were both quite thinking, you know, we could really go for this. Little did we know, on the other side of the mountain, that people were being turned back by guides because of the avalanche risk, because it had been snowing.
All right.
So we'd got up early and gone, and obviously it was the two of us, we weren't with a guide or anything, so we carried on, and it was in the previous times we've been up there, we've been able to follow tracks and look at other people on the mountain, but we kind of didn't even have that this time. I mean, we had maps, we had GPS, we had all that kind of thing, but it always gives you a slight sense of security when there's somebody else around and that kind of thing. So anyway, we went for it, and we took a short rest at the Valette Refuge at 4-3, and carried on. And when we got to the top, it was so fantastic to have summited the mountain, but I couldn't get excited because I knew what was coming. Like, I thought, God, now if the wind died down, because it was too windy at the time when we got there, I thought, I've got to fly off here. So I was just in quite a state, really. You know, I was delighted to have summited, but I was just thinking, I was getting really nervous about what was coming. So we were assessing the conditions, and the wind was coming over the back from Italy,
mm-hmm.
so there was no way we could have taken off in the direction we wanted to, because we wanted to fly back down to Chandivet and land near the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sat and we decided to sit and watch the wind and see what happened, and we made a plan that if the wind died down,
mm-hmm.
we'd take off in the direction of Italy. As soon as we were clear of the summit, we'd swing a right, and we'd head for, we'd go back over the mountain, try and clear the Dome de Goute, and go back down. If we didn't have enough height for that, the plan was to go over the Col de Miage, just to the left of that,
mm-hmm.
and then if that didn't work, if we were losing too much height, we could always just go and land in Italy and sort ourselves out afterwards. And fortunately, the wind died down, we managed to take off. I took off first, and Erwin followed me. I was sinking quite rapidly. The air was absolutely hideous.
Was it?
Yeah, oh, it was terrifying. Like, I took off, and I just instantly, it was like being in a, it was rotary, it was just throwing me all over the place. And I wanted to turn right as soon as possible, but obviously I wanted to make sure I was clear of the summit in case I took a sudden drop or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, I was kind of being thrown everywhere, and I was going for the Dome. I thought, there's no way I can do that. I'll go for the Col. And it was kind of one of those sort of close your eyes, cross your legs and go for it. So I did that. As soon as I got over the Col, I hit another rotary wind that threw me about again.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to get out of the sky. I was like, and we'd picked a couple of spots out for landing. And our first choice, as we were coming over it, it'd been in the sun for a few hours because we were now getting into the afternoon. And so as we came over to set up for landing, every time we came above the field, it was firming. So we just kind of straight back up again. So we managed to just adjust our landing, and we went slightly to the right on a bit of a slopey field. It wasn't an ideal landing, but it was fine. And yeah, crash landed in my crampons again, but I was just absolutely thrilled to be on the ground. You know, it was, even summiting the mountain, it's only sort of, normally it's, you're halfway there when you've got to the top, and then you get back down again, but then I still have the flight and everything, so actually landing and being on the ground was just amazing.
So how long did it take you from the top to the bottom?
The flight?
Yeah.
It was 20 minutes.
20 minutes, is that all?
Yeah,
wow.
It was a couple of days up and 20 minutes down.
And did you get any collapses on the way down in this bad air?
No, the wing was great actually. It's an incredibly stable wing, and I was being thrown around, and you know, it sounded quite bad, but it didn't take any collapses. Yes.
And what about your harness? Did you just have a little lightweight harness?
Yeah, I had the oxygen ozone harness, and that's it's the rucksack. So it's you carry the wing, and I had all my kit and the wing in that rucksack, so that when I got to the top, obviously I put all my other kit into the back of the harness,
yeah.
which was just inside that, just to minimise the weight. I mean, I normally fly on an ozone bus, which weighs just under 20 kilos, and I've got my harness and everything else.
Yeah.
And I don't need to tell you what they're like to carry. And then this, the ultralight, was amazing. It was less than 5 kilograms.
What, the whole lot?
With the harness. Yeah.
Including the harness?
Including the harness.
Wow.
It was like carrying my handbag to the top of the mountain. When we were going past people couldn't believe it when we said we were paragliders and that we were going to fly down, because they just looked at our rucksacks and obviously just looked like a day pack, really, mine
yeah.
did.
Wow. And so did you, and did Erwin have a lightweight glider as well?
Erwin was actually flying the first mountain wing that Ozone made. So he was on the first one that they'd made, and I was on the latest one that they'd made. And it was quite interesting, because mine was actually smaller than his. I was on the 19-metre one.
Mm.
And the only difference was that I was just sinking quicker. But both of them, you know, they were light pieces of kit, and both flew well.
Mm. And what's your background then? Have you done mountaineering like this before?
Yeah, I've climbed a few mountains. Last September I climbed Chao Oyu, which is the sixth highest mountain in the world. It's just next door to Everest.
God, that's 600
metres lower than Everest.
Yeah.
So I was up there, and I climbed Mustagata and Aconcagua.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how was it being 8,000 metres? Were you on oxygen?
Yeah, I did. But actually, I ran out. My oxygen ran out about 40 minutes before I got to the summit. So, I mean, it was just... The oxygen definitely helps, but it just, when I ran out, it just slowed me down massively.
Yeah.
It didn't completely stop me. One of the reasons why I wanted oxygen, though, was because, particularly being a woman, it really helps with your circulation, you know, for your fingers and toes.
Mm.
And I didn't want to get frostbite and lose anything.
Yeah. And what was the weather like on Troyo?
The weather was absolutely horrific. I mean, we experienced quite a lot of storms while we were up there. And we lost 22 tents. During
22 tents.
We were all in them when it happened, and it was about 4 o'clock in the morning when this storm hit us. 100-mile-an-hour winds, and we were literally pinning ourselves down to the ground with our ice axes as the tents were being ripped away.
Mm.
It was we've actually got film footage of it, and when people see it, because obviously that sounds quite dramatic, you know, your tent gets torn away from you, but people were literally getting their stuff out of the tent because the tent were being, because of the wind, it was kind of being crushed against your whole body, and the poles were snapping, and then the outer layer went, and then, yeah, we were getting all our kit and ourselves out because the tents were going.
Did you think you were going to get blown away?
I'm quite pleased to say that when I'm in situations like that, I don't sort of think the worst. I kind of get on with what's happening. I knew that I had to focus on getting out of the tent and what I had to do.
Mm.
And as the wind was getting worse and I realised what was happening, there was a couple of people that were panicking. So they kind of became everybody else's focus to sort of calm them down and help them. And then I knew that I had to get my kit out and I had to kind of get my ice axe into the ground. Like I had a whole list of things I needed to do. And it's a bit like falling off Mont Blanc. At the time it happened, when I was falling, I didn't think, oh, I'm falling. I thought, I need to arrest myself.
Yeah.
So I was kind of busy dealing with it. And it isn't until afterwards you think, blimey, that was absolutely horrendous.
Mental. And would you like to go back to 8,000 metres?
Yeah. I love the challenge of an expedition. I love how you feel when you're out there, and the kind of the whole achievement of it, and just being with the people, and the place that your mind gets into when you go and do an expedition like that. And I think I'd really like to do Everest.
You would, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd
like to fly off the top of Everest.
Wouldn't we all? It's a long old trip. That would only take about 4 minutes, I think, from top to bottom, doesn't it? The air's so thin.
Oh, that would be amazing, yeah.
Yeah. And so have you got plans in the back of your mind to do that, or?
Yeah, actually, I'm seriously looking at climbing Everest. I'm looking at going to Everest Base Camp this April coming. Then to actually climb it the following year, so 2011.
You're going to go for a look-see next year?
Yeah, well, I actually went last April to base camp, and I'm working on a project. It's the oldest nunnery in Nepal, and they need a lot of work doing, and it's a charity project, and it's we're trying to get them running water, so I'm probably going to go on another service trek this April and sort that out and be part of that, and just do the trip, and obviously all the climbs and treks you do, a great preparation for the big one.
Wow. And where's the monastery? Is it in Tambuche?
It's in the Khumbu Valley. It's literally en route to Everest Base Camp.
Yeah. Wow.
It's an amazing place. There's one nun there, and she's been meditating for 50 years.
What, it's in solitary?
Yep, she's been in solitary. And the other nuns are allowed to take her food and drink. And it's quite an interesting story. Her family were trying to marry her off, and she kept escaping, and she eventually got to this nunnery, and she went into meditation, and she's basically never been out. There are occasions when you're allowed to go to a hatch in the wall and talk to her, and the Sherpa people do go and do that, and they get blessings and things for the climbs, but often you'll go past and she'll be in complete meditation, and you can't go anywhere near. But there's not lots and lots of nunneries left there, and obviously with the Buddhist religion and faith and everything, they're trying to preserve it. And as the Sherpa people are getting more wages from all the tourists, they're sending their children away to Kathmandu and to India to get their education. So the things that are normally passed on through the family, of the culture and everything, is kind of being lost. And so people are now trying to sort of preserve these nunneries and keep them going, because obviously they want to keep the tradition and the faith and the culture.
Mm. Yeah, life. And will you take your glider to Nepal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Have you still got the lightweight one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. And have you flown in Nepal before?
No, I haven't, but I've heard that there's lots of good flying spots.
Yeah, I think so. Cool. And did you do any of this for, was it for charity? Were you raising money when you went?
Yes, it was. It was for cancer research.
And
I've got a website. It's,
Just Giving.
Yeah, it's Just Giving. Yeah. Squash Volcano.
Squash Volcano. And is Squash your real name?
No, it's a nickname, but I've always had it and everybody calls me Squash.
And why do they call you Squash?
Sorry?
Why do they call you Squash?
Because when I was born, my sister couldn't say my name, which is Louise. She was 15 months old.
Right.
So she called me E's, then P's, then Squashy P's, and then just Squash, and it just completely stuck. and it's brilliant, though, because people remember it, you know. And
yeah,
like,
really, yeah.
You don't get mixed up.
No, definitely. Cool. All right, well, listen, and how much money have you raised so far?
Almost £1,000.
Almost £1,000, brilliant, well done, congratulations. Any advice for people who want to go and climb on? Because, I mean, you're the first woman. I was a bit gobsmacked at that, to be honest. You're the first British woman.
Yeah, I didn't actually know, and it wasn't until after I'd done it that a few people started to say, I don't think another female Brit's done it. So I started asking questions, and a couple of people came back and said, oh, so-and-so did it. So I actually contacted those people, and they hadn't been from the summit. They'd flown from further down because of bad weather, and so far, there's been nobody else come forward.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
But I guess they reckon that there's only something like 5 flyable days a year off the top of Mont Blanc. And as we were going up there, we kept bumping into people and chatting to lots of different climbers. And I was meeting people that were saying to me, oh, I've been wanting to climb Mont Blanc for 10 years and fly off the top, but you never get the weather. And I was thinking, God, I've given myself a month to do this. That's absolutely, completely unrealistic. I'm never going to be able to do it. And lots of people were just saying, oh, yeah, good luck, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But you managed. And so what advice would you give to anyone else who wanted to do the same thing?
Just definitely take a decent amount of time. Don't expect to go there and be able to do it in the normal period of time that they sort of set aside to climb Mont Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need, I think a month was a good amount of time, and I think you need to be very prepared. You need to be fully fit for it.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to, you know, fly the wing that you're on competently and know what you're doing. And also have a really good climbing partner or a really good guide, because without them, you know, it's just not possible.
Yeah.
So definitely get prepared and spend some time on the mountain, you know, get to know it. We learned so much from our trips up there. You know, we went a couple of times up and down before we actually did it, and it was invaluable because we got to know each other, we got to know the kit, we got to know the route. And, you know, mountains, particularly a mountain like Mont Blanc, it's so misleading. If you get the right weather and everything else, you can literally go up and down there in 2 days. And I know some people that have climbed it and literally said they ran over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was fine. But on a mountain like that, if you get bad weather, that's when you need to have the experience and the strength and everything else to survive it. Because it, literally what can be just a nice walk in the sunshine where you're a bit short of breath can turn into a, you know, a potentially deadly situation.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of people get caught out.
Yeah. Be prepared.
And get your kit right and get the weight right, because you don't want to carry anything extra.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck. And any other European mountains you want to fly off?
Thank you.
Have you got any other European mountains you want to fly off?
Yeah, well, I'm heading out to the Alps in January, and I'm hoping to fly off off a few round Teen and Val d'Isère in January to see what the snow's looking like and what's happening. But yeah, I really love taking off in the snow and flying around at this time of year, because obviously I've never done that before, so it's like a whole different picture down below when you're flying above snowy mountains.
Yeah.